Frank, we've seen on the left side of the line, obviously, things have switched up throughout the year. But on the right side, you've had Kelce, Brandon, and Lane for almost every game. What's it like having those three guys as solid as they've been all year?
Yeah, it's a luxury not only to have those guys healthy, but just playing together and have three guys playing at a very high level. So the consistency of that, the confidence in that just grows, you know, more and more every week.
It looks like Alshon's heating up, at least statistically. What do you see behind the scenes?
I've seen the same guy. I mean, that's one of the things that I love about Alshon. You know, even early on when the ball wasn't going to him as much, totally unselfish, hard worker. You just know these things take time. I mean, it's the chemistry, the opportunities, and so the confidence level that grows. So he's made some huge plays, a couple huge plays in that Dallas game. And those are the kind of plays. That's why he's here. I mean, those exact plays that he made in that game are – you know, what we just want to see, we want to keep seeing that.
What have you done to help Big D along since he's taken over for Jason Peters?
We mix it up. I think the best thing we can do is to mix it up, you know, and the way you do that is the first thing you do is you run the ball. And you just don't want to have to line up and throw it 50 times against any defensive end in this league. And when you got a guy stepping in to fill in. So number one thing is you run the ball. The number two thing you do is you throw short, quick game and short rhythm passing. The number three thing you do is you give them occasional chip help. And then, you know, and then you just got to keep people, you got to keep defenses off balance that way. And so the timing and rhythm of the drop, because I think rushers get into a rhythm as well. So we try to keep them off rhythm.
What's something that you've had to do less of that as he's, you know, gone along here?
Yeah, I do think that's a fair statement. I think it's, you know, the first week or two that he's in, you're probably thinking on any play that's a longer developing play, we better give him chip help. Some of the things you have to do that, sometimes you have to compromise the underneath route by the back because you might want the back on one side running around, and then you have to move him over and adjust his route a little bit. So when the more and more confidence you gain in a player that, you know what, we can give him help, but I'd really rather keep the back over on the right side for this play because it helps pattern integrity more. So there's definitely probably that's a true statement. We've given him less help in that regard.
Brian, the two-point conversions, obviously it's circumstance, but how do you weigh that moving forward, putting stuff on film? I know, Doug, obviously there was success, but and you might want to think about going for two more often, but then you have these plays on film if you really need a two-point conversion. In a big spot, how do you kind of weigh that?
I think that's a fair question. You know, I mean, it's something that was discussed, you know, on the sideline. And I think there's two sides to that coin. You know, one is a growing confidence that, you know, the more of those you make, you can develop this mindset. When we go for two, we make it. That's just what we do. And then the second part of that is we feel like our inventory of two-point plays is large enough. So we worked on it a lot in OTAs and training camp. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that you work on all year long. And there's typically two kinds of two-point plays. There's the philosophies that teams have. One is do something a little bit gimmicky that they may not have ever seen or it's a little bit funky. You saw us do one of those. And then the other philosophy is just run your best low red zone plays. And so we have inventory of both of those things that we can always dial up when needed. I don't know the exact count, but it's probably 15 or 20, you know, in our big inventory of plays. I would say it's at least that.
So your two-point plays are more, they're not necessarily designed for the team that you're playing, but maybe more so the defensive looks so that you can use them in any game?
Exactly. You know, the two-point play, down in the low red zone, there's a handful of coverages that you're typically going to see, especially on two-point plays. So, and we know teams mix that up. So you got to have, in one sense, you play to beat a specific coverage, but then you always know they have a secondary coverage. So you always have, like, for instance, if it's a heavy man coverage team, you got to have other answers besides just a man answer because you never know, they can change it up. But you have a primary purpose in mind. You do that, and then it's more designed, as you say, per the coverages we're expecting.
When a player like Alshon is going against his former team for the first time, is there a tendency for him to be a little bit too hyped up? Or, on the other hand, does he have an advantage going against players he's practiced against?
Yeah, I think, Yes, to both of those things. There is a little bit of a tendency to be overhyped. I know I experienced that. I played for one team for a long time and then went to another team, and then that very next year went back and played against my former. Happens a lot in the league these days, and no doubt you get hyped up. There's no doubt about that. But as you said, the second part of that is you know those players, and you got confidence, and you know their strengths and weaknesses. So you got to control your emotions. I do believe you have to control your emotions and just play your game.
The last couple of weeks, you guys have done some things to take advantage of the aggressiveness of Von Miller and David Irving. Why have those things worked so well?
The players. I mean, you know, the players are doing a great job of executing the little change-up things that we do to take advantage of over-aggressiveness of players. So, you know, I think it continues to boil down. Coach says it every week. I mean, it's about how we practice, and we've really set a very high standard for how we practice and how we execute on the practice field, and we feel like that's who we're going to be on Sunday.
Frank, Big V, where has he improved the most since he first went in for Jason?
You know, I just think that's tough to say. I would say his pass blocking has been excellent, but I look at this last game, you know, obviously we ran the ball very well, and that long run that Jay had in this last game where Big V's pulling, I know everybody saw it, and it was really good by V and many good run blocks and that thing, but that particular block was a tough block, and how athletic he was and how his hips and leverage into the block, just creating just enough of a hole for Jay along with Brandon, you know, getting movement inside, created just a small hole for Jay to get through. So I think he's made improvements in both areas.
What you guys do offensively, that lane, be able to handle guys like Vaughn and DeMarcus and pretty much shut them down by himself without much help?
You can't say, you know, I don't like to overhype players, especially in the middle of the season, but I mean, Lane's playing great football. I just can't imagine there's a better right tackle in the league. I can't imagine there's any tackle, if you add up the cumulative guys that he's going to have to block by the time the year is over, and their sacks, you know, I mean, it's unreal. This particular year, it's not like this every year, but this particular year with the defender, the defenses that we play, and the pass rushers that he's facing, and then to lose Jason Peters, and then we're giving extra help on the other side, and we go in and we say, well, are we going to give Lane help on Von Miller, or are we going to let him go by himself? And it's been unbelievable. He's playing out of his mind.
With the running back rotation, LeGarrette, I think, led the way with about 50% of the snaps. Was that the plan going in, or is that just sort of the flow of the game?
Yeah, that the plan was probably you can't say the plan was a certain percentage. You know, as you guys know, we've talked about it a lot. So if you have X number of running plays and passing plays in your inventory, and you guys know we attach numbers for the backs, there is flexibility in that. Some of them have asterisk numbers where they're interchangeable. Others are very specific. So on the call sheet, there's 100-some plays. You never know which ones are going to get dialed up. So the range of what a guy could get is hard to predict. You know, so one week it's going to be 50%. The next week it's going to be 25%. And there were a couple runs, to be honest, that we had designed for Jay, and LeGarrette was on the field, and we just kind of were rolling and left him on. Next week, it could happen the other way. You know, we got plays designed for LeGarrette. Jay happens to be in there, or Corey happens to be in there, and Coach just said, no, I don't want to change. I don't want to give them a chance to change their personnel. I think Coach has a really good feel for that. I think really this last week he called the run game phenomenally well like that and left things rolling at times differently than we had talked about, and it seemed to work out.
And so is that the reason Jay only got?
Yes, that was as much anyway. I think in the long run, I think we probably envisioned Jay getting a little bit more snaps in that this game, but that's just the way it played out.
When you have a young quarterback, you know, like you guys last year with Carson, the Bears this year with Trubisky, like how fine a line is there, like balancing, you know, how much you know help him out, protect him during the course of the game, as opposed to like let him do everything, you know, whether he's ready or not.
Yeah, that's always the balancing act. That's the healthy tension. And what you find out over the years is you let him go, you let him do a little bit more because you know he can handle it, and then we better pull him back a little bit, and, you know, and then you let it, it's like, it's just a good analogy. These guys are thoroughbreds, right? These guys, you ride the horse, you know, he's our main horse, and, you know, sometimes you're letting it out and go full speed and do everything that you do, and then other times you pull back on the reins And that's what the jockey does. And, you know, coach is the jockey. You know, as coaches, we're the jockey, so to speak. And, hey, sometimes you got to slow it down and don't try to do too much. And then other times you don't get horses like this very often. You know, you got to experiment with them. How fast can they go? How much can they do? And there's no way that you know unless you let them do some. But then you got to have the sense and the knack. And I think coach has done a really good job of that.
Looking at that from the other side of the ball, have you detected a shift in the way opponents attack Carson from a pressure standpoint this year, as opposed to when he was being tested as a rookie? Has he shown some things that he's able to do that may have changed those philosophies on the other side of the ball?
Yeah, I think the tendency is usually always going to be to, you know, to pressure a younger quarterback. And obviously early on, you know, first part of the season, we were getting pressured a lot, and they got to us a few times. We made some plays. It's typically the way it works. The thing with Carson is you pressure him, you still got to tackle him. You know, you still got to tackle him, and he's proven that he's pretty hard to tackle. So what I have experienced and seen over the years is just like there's ebb and flow to offense of how it gets called, it's the same thing with defenses. We put on film a couple times where we beat the blitz, then they, you know, teams are watching that and say, you know what, let's just not blitz this guy so much. Or all of a sudden you get beat on a couple blitzes and it's like piranhas. There's blood in the water and, like, hey, we can get to this guy. And then, you know, so then for a few weeks until you show you can handle it, and it typically kind of goes ebb and flow throughout the season.
Pass in the third quarter, it was third and one. How gutsy of a play call is that, and what needs to happen for that play to work?
On the one to sell it?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a great call, great feel and call by coach. You know, we're meeting the night before. I can just tell you, he and I always meet on Saturday night the night before, and for an hour, hour and a half, just going through the call sheet, talking about what he's going to call, why he's going to call it, and we're bouncing things back and forth. And, I mean, that was one I knew he was going to call. I mean, he was just waiting for that opportunity to call that play, had a good sense. Be honest with you, the play looked okay in practice. But it didn't look. Those are the kind of plays, and we said as a staff, that's the kind of play that usually looks better in a game than it does in practice. It's hard to get the exact look on that play. So it was the right call, and obviously Selleck did a great job of selling it and a good execution.
Thanks, Ryan.
Okay, thank you.
Talking to questions.